Helplessness versus hopelessness, hanging in through the hard times, and how a real relationship with Christ and surrender changes everything, and the $4 was a catalyst. All this and more right now.
The Remarkable People Podcast. Check it out. The Remarkable People Podcast. Listen, do, repeat, for life. The Remarkable People Podcast.
Hello, friends. Welcome to this week's episode of the Remarkable People Podcast, the Jackie Semerol Tate story. This week, I actually almost cried three times during the episode. The episode starts slow because she's going through her past and her history and the things that made her who she is, good, bad, or ugly, during the story and today. And then she transitions into how even during the hardest of times, we can have joy and peace and love. And it was bleak for her at times. There was trauma in her teens. There was depression. There was a failed marriage. There was going broke several times and being left with $4 in her purse and so much more. So if you hang through the entire episode, you will be blessed. You will be inspired. If you don't know Christ, I hope it's a catalyst to you coming to know Christ. And if you do know Christ, I hope it's convicting in a positive way. You know, convictions from the Holy Ghost, guilt's from Satan. So hopefully this is convicting in a positive way to bring you even closer to Christ and help you heal in so many ways that I'll never know. So at this time, get your pen and paper ready. Jackie is an entrepreneur. She is a coach. She is a marketing and sales executive. She is into real estate and real estate investing, and she really is a remarkable woman. So get ready for a remarkable episode that really could change your life. Also, before we start, I just want to say thank you to our sponsors. We have three sponsors today, and I'm going to go through them fast, but you can check out our website for more detail. MyPillow, seriously, the best sheets, mattress topper, pillows, slippers, towels I've ever used. You can go to mypillow.com/remarkable and get up to 80% on all the home goods, all the nice things you want, all the things you need. Go to MyPillow, use promo code remarkable, get up to 80% off, and you will love it. You're going to save money, get great American products, and you will be happy. If you're not, you call them up and they give you a full refund. It's a win-win-win. You help an American company, you get amazing stuff for cheap, and then you get to help our support our podcast. And the reason why I hesitate is because I hate using the word cheap. Their products are inexpensive, but high-end quality. So go check out mypillow.com/remarkable. Second sponsor is Jasper. Jasper is an air filtration system. It comes in a circular container about 3 feet high. It's beautiful. It looks like deco art. It's quiet and it gets the job done. I would never have looked at this product because the price tag, it's right around $1,000. I'm not going to lie to you. But with promo code REMARKABLE, you get $100 off that. And sometimes they run specials even beyond that special. So check out Jasper, JASPR.com. This air filter has helped us in so many ways. Not only does the air actually feel cleaner, not only does it help me sleep, but it helped me identify toxins in the air that I didn't even know were there. When we were cooking with certain pots and pans, we'd hear it go off. We switched the pots and pans, no more. So the pots and pans were actually emitting chemicals while we were cooking. Sounds crazy, but spraying cologne, I had no idea how toxic that was. After spraying it, I'd hear the Jasper go on in seconds. And then next thing I know, I'm like, whoa, this is a toxic odor. Do a little research, talk to my friends. Sure enough, bad for us, right? Third sponsor, new, first time being on our podcast, is Console Vault. Go to consolevault.com and use the promo code again, remarkable. You are going to get, I believe it's 10% off your order, and then you're going to sponsor the podcast at the same time. What's Console Vault? Console Vault is secure storage solutions. So basically, if you have an armrest in your truck or SUV, a center console, it's a vault that goes in there. It screws into the frame of the vehicle simply by taking the old screws out, taking the tray out that's in there, putting the console vault in, re-screwing it into the frame. And then there's different types of either dimple key technology or passcodes. There's all different ways they use to secure them. But now you get a safe, a vault in your vehicle that unless people use a torch to get it open, it's not going anywhere. They literally have to steal your whole vehicle so they have time to get in your vault, meaning less thefts happen. Your weapons, your cash, your jewelry, your wallet, whatever you don't want to take in to places. You go to the grocery store, you go to the gym. Now you can lock it up with a passcode or a key and you are safe. So I love Console Vault. I've been with the company for, I want to say since 2007, maybe longer. Actually, it was longer. It's 2005. So check out mypillow.com/remarkable, jasper.com. Use promo code remarkable. And now you're going to also have consolevault.com and use promo code remarkable. All three, you win, you help us, you help the company, and we can continue the podcast to glorify God and help you grow. And at this time, this is exactly what we're going to do. Ladies and gentlemen, check out Jackie's remarkable story and reach out to her and I if we can help you in any way. Enjoy. Hey, Jackie, how are you today?
I'm so good. How are you?
Man, I'm doing fantastic, remarkable even. I just told our listeners a little bit about you and your $4 story, and we're going to jump right into this because I know everybody's waiting to hear your story. Before we do, though, if you have a first-time listener or a serial listener that's been with us all 4 years and listened to every episode, if someone hangs through, they're going to get tons of gold they can apply to their life, I'm sure. But if you guarantee them one truth, one life hack, one powerful step they can take to change their life for the better, what are they going to learn this episode?
Ooh, good question. If there's one life hack you're going to learn by the end of this episode, it is how to hang in through the darkest moments and what's waiting for you on the other side.
Beautiful. So for someone to come to that to be their number one lesson, that means something had to have to happen in your life to bring you to that point. So let's start at the beginning. Everything that happens to us, good, bad, ugly, pretty, pretty ugly, makes us the people we are. Where did your life start, Jackie? What was your upbringing like?
So I actually was born and raised in a suburb of Chicago called Elgin, Illinois. And my dad worked, he was an airline mechanic, aircraft mechanic for American Airlines. And so he worked at O'Hare Airport and he worked the graveyard shift. So he was an overnight guy. So, and my mom was a stay-at-home mom. I was the youngest of three. And my brother and sister are 11 and 9 years older than me. So I am truly the baby, which, you know, was a, you know, blessing and curse, right? All in one. But yeah, we were very just, I would say, middle class, hardworking. My dad was a blue collar. And I learned a lot about the power of family and the power of work ethic from my parents. That was their, obviously, I would say the things they instilled in me. The thing I always say I got the best of from my parents was a strong spiritual legacy. So they definitely have a strong faith in God. And so that was what my upbringing looked like. You know, we weren't wealthy at all, but as a kid, I had no idea that, you know, when times were tough, I didn't know. My parents did a good job of hiding that from us. So, yeah.
Beautiful. Now with your birth, were you a happy little accident? Were you planned? They're just like, let's have one more. How did that work out?
I was actually very planned. My parents wanted to kind of do a second family. They were young when they had their first two. And my dad was in the Navy when both my siblings were born. And so now my dad's at home. He has a stable, steady job. They wanted to do it again. They said they wanted to have a second family. So I was actually supposed to be the oldest of two in their quote unquote second family. And And then, so I was a toddler. My mom got pregnant again. And then she was actually 4.5 months pregnant and she had a miscarriage. And so they took that as God's way of saying, no, you're done. So technically I do have a little brother. They named him Jedediah, and that's what I know. So no, I was not an accident.
Beautiful. You know, the reason I ask that is because if someone is planned or not planned, that affects a lot of time their just mentality through life. So I just wanted to see how that would play into it. So you were essentially, you had two older, you said sisters, but you were almost like an only child with that 10-year gap.
No, an older brother and an older sister. So what a beach. But yeah, then a 9-year gap between my sister and I.
Man, okay. All right. So now you're growing up, you got a nice family. You're in your teens. Where does life go from there?
Well, so I was 10 years old when both my brother and sister got married, moved out of the house. And so from 10 on, I kind of did live the only child existence in a way. And then when I was a sophomore in high school, my dad got transferred from the Chicago area to Phoenix. And so we packed up, and of course, I'm 15 years old. I have been born and raised in the same, you know, with the same friends, the same school the whole time. And so I was very bitter. I was a very bitter, angsty teenager when my parents moved me out to Arizona. But honestly, I can look back and say that is one of the best things that probably happened to me at that time. I was not on a good trajectory. I had a lot of things that happened. I mean, some of it is typical teenage, you know, going through the transition between junior high and high school, and, you know, going, you know, all the hormones and everything that comes with it. And then some of it was traumatic events that happened as well. So I went through a lot of stuff, we'll just say, my freshman year in high school. So when we moved to Phoenix, while I felt like the world was falling out from under me at the time, I can look back now and say, you know what? It actually gave me a second chance. It gave me a chance to reinvent myself, to sort of hit the do-over. I did go through a lot of depression and things trying to just make that transition. But overall, it was a very positive experience. And I met my best lifelong friends in my high school in Arizona. So it was a blessing.
Very nice. Now, while you were in high school, were you able to overcome the depression, or is that something you were able to work out later in life?
I worked that out later in life. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So now you're in Arizona. Mm-hmm. Things are changing for the better. Where does your life go from there?
So when we basically, I would say, well, let me kind of back up a little bit. So while I was a kid, I was in ballet. Dance was everything for me. And so when we moved to Arizona, I did start to go to the School of Ballet Arizona. And so that was a really interesting experience that made me look past ballet and maybe say, maybe I don't want just ballet. I want to put other forms of dance in there as well, modern, jazz, contemporary, that kind of thing. And so I started going to a different school then. So I decided I was going to major in dance in college, all of that good stuff, which I did briefly, and then ended up leaving school, moving back to Chicago with the idea that I was going to audition for what's called the Ruth Page Foundation. And this is a high level dance school that basically paves your way to becoming a professional dancer. And so I moved to Chicago with that in mind. And I have to tell you, I showed up first time they were having the auditions. I decided, you know what? No, I'm going to wait. I'm going to wait till the next audition call. I need to get more flexible. I need to get more of this, better at that, what have you. Three times I almost went to the audition and didn't. And then life circumstances happened, and I actually moved in with my sister to help her take care of her three kids because she had to go through a surgery, all this good stuff. And I thought, okay, I'll sublet my apartment. I will go back. I never went back. So I'm 20 years old when all of this went down, and I experienced my truest and only regret in life. And what that taught me is that really the big regrets we have are the chances we don't take. So I never pursued a profession in dance after that. I felt like I missed my opportunity. When I moved back to Arizona, I met my my first husband, and we got married. And I started going back to school at night and things like that, trying to pick back up the ball for dance. But, you know, I mean, with dance, that's not something that you can do later in life. You have to take advantage of when your body will actually do the things. And so, you know, so I missed that opportunity, and I will say it's my only regret. But then from there, I ended up getting married, having two beautiful daughters, and getting into real estate. And so that was sort of that little transition period, took 5-6 years.
Beautiful. Yeah. And I don't know a lot about ballet, nor do I pretend to, but I've heard like once you're 15, you're old, right? So doing 20, that would be like way beyond the age, correct?
Yeah. Even at 20 years old, that's late to get in the game. And honestly, that was part of what was going on in my mental, you know, in my mindset at the time. I kept saying, you know, all these other girls who are 15 and 16 and getting into it. But I do think I had a little bit of a different perspective also, because having had a brief period of time in college with dance, I mean, when you major in dance, if you go through your 4 years of college, you'll be 22 when you get out and are pursuing those next steps. So I don't think I saw it as detrimental as maybe I would have had I not had that experience with college. But yeah, it was definitely part of my mindset. Like, I had to be better because I'm already older than a lot of these other people that are going to be there. So,
yeah. And it's strange when you're in your 40s, you know, a couple of years is no big deal. But when you're in college, a couple of years just seems like forever, like a whole different class of people. So I could see how, especially in the ballet industry, that would be so hard. So yeah. Now you go and you help your sister, mm-hmm. You move away from the ballet. You know, you're moving on with life, you get married, you have two children. Between your birth and that point, did we miss anything significant that'll tie into today? Or do you want to pick up the story from there?
We can pick up the story from there.
All right. So anything, you know, this is all your story, connecting with people and just helping them grow. So where does your life go from there?
Well, so from there, I will say, so I'm basically a stay-at-home mom at first, and then I start to kind of tiptoe back into the workplace a little bit. But I would work part-time when the girls were little, and I worked for a credit agency. And so, you know, it was 12 hours a week, no big deal, really just to get me out of the house and put me in with adults was the main goal. And then when my youngest daughter, after she was born, my ex-husband and I were thinking about getting into real estate investing. And so we started poking around, thinking about buying our first investment property. And the agent that we started to work with, I don't think she really worked with a lot of investors. And so she wasn't really able to guide us. And we were new investors. We didn't know what we didn't know. And so I decided to go to real estate school just to be able to get the knowledge I needed and to be able to represent ourselves for buying and selling our investment properties. Funny thing is that I absolutely fell in love with real estate. I fell in love with all of the moving pieces, the legalities of it, which is crazy because, you know, again, I'm a creative. So for all the legalities of real estate and all the little moving pieces to appeal to me is a little surprising, or was a little surprising. But I got out of school, and by the time I was done with real estate school and I got my license, I thought, you know, I actually want to do this. I want to do this for a living. And so I did. I started working with clients right out of the gate. And funny enough, my ex-husband and I never did buy any investment properties, but I did get thrown into the industry that I've spent the last 22 years in. So I do love it.
Nice. So that worked out well for you. So you're doing real estate. You guys aren't buying any investment properties, but you transition your career to that. Mm-hmm. So when you're moving forward, you mentioned your ex-husband. how did you go from your husband to your ex, and what was that transition like?
Sure. So the one thing that I will tell you he and I agreed on is really we were young. We didn't know each other for long when we got married. And I think had we been a little more cautious and a little more intentional, we would have known we shouldn't get married. But God had other plans, and we have two beautiful daughters out of it. But the girls were young. They were 3 and 5 when we separated. Basically I became a single mom when the girls were really young. And so I did start to work for a title company at that time, again, still using my real estate knowledge, just doing a different perspective of real estate. And I worked as a special operations manager for their corporate office. And just to have more of a 9-to-5 style job and bring in a more steady check and, you know, have things like benefits, that type of thing as a single mom, felt that was important. So I did that for a while. And then after doing that for, I think, about 4 years, then I went back into real estate sales as well. And so, yeah, I mean, that was kind of that transition. What I will say is one of the stories, again, because we're here to try and get to that end goal, what I will say is I mentioned the depression earlier, not really anything I got over significantly until I did become a single mom. And part of that journey was before the girl's dad and I split up, I mentioned I was a stay-at-home mom for the most part. And I was having a day where the girls were playing in their playroom and I was laying in the, like, kind of across the hall watching them play. And I was laying on the ground, just feeling, I couldn't move. And I don't know if you or any of your listeners have ever had that level of depression where you're just, life feels so heavy. And that was where I was at. And I remember watching the girls play and feeling so heavy that I couldn't even sit up. And my oldest daughter came over and she had like her little, they were having a little tea party and she had her little tea set and she brings it over and tries to pour me a little glass of imaginary tea. And I remember just looking at her and not being able to engage. And she kind of looked at me and you could tell she knew something was wrong with mommy. She was trying to fix it in all of her, you know, 4-year-old ways that you would try to fix it. And she couldn't. So I still remember the look on her face when she kind of figured out, like, yeah, something's wrong with mom, but I'm not quite sure what. And she walked away and just went back to playing with her sister. And I'm laying on the ground and tears are just pouring, you know, down. I'm laying this way and the tears are pouring down the side of my face. And that was a moment for me where I said, something has to change. I have to get help. And so I did start to go to a therapist at that point in time. And I think that was really life-changing for me. And it really did start where my then husband at the time, we started talking about our marriage. And so we wanted to get help for our marriage. And he said, and, you know, I mean, this was one of the things I do think he did right, is he said, you know, Jackie, you got a lot of stuff going on and I have a lot of stuff going on. And he said, I don't think we need to get help as a couple right now. I think you need to start seeing someone and I need to start seeing someone. And I really grabbed onto that and I grabbed onto that opportunity and I found a wonderful counselor. I did go on antidepressants for a while as well. I worked with both a psychiatrist and a therapist. And I think the 1-2 punch of the medication as well as the cognitive behavioral therapy really did help. It changed my life. It changed the trajectory of everything that came next. So I share that not because it's fun or comfortable to share, but I share that because I know there are people who struggle with mental health issues. And I just want to say, you don't have to carry that weight on your shoulders all by yourself. It's okay to get help. And whether that looks like medication and therapy or just therapy, I would highly recommend never just medication. I don't think that's a good, it's a good way to maybe stop the pain of the moment. But if you want to work through it and really change and come out of that, kind of go through that point in time where you, you know, like the caterpillar turning into the butterfly, you have to get into the cocoon for a while. So that cocoon aspect definitely is when you're getting that help. But if you want to come out as a butterfly, please make sure you're working with a team that's helping you in multifaceted ways, not just one specific way or the other.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, if we're medicating problems, you got two major problems. One, you're not dealing with the root cause. It's just going to grow. And two, you can only medicate so long and you're going to need more medicine, more drugs, and then your body's just going to break. Your mind's going to break. So I agree with you completely. So we have listeners all around the world, male and female, all countries, all cultures. What were some of the specific things you can remember that you did, Jackie, your exercises? You know, everybody's situation's different, but what were some of the things that really helped you at least act as a catalyst to your journey of healing?
You know, I remember a few things that my counselor and I talked about together, went through together. I will say that my counselor was faith-based. I found her through my church. And I think that was really important because my belief in God, my specific Christian beliefs in Jesus Christ are a big part of who I am. And I do think that that's important, that if you're finding someone to help you, to have someone who shares the same faith as you, I think is a very important aspect. Because again, like you said, if we're just looking at one aspect or the other, we're not taking a holistic approach. So one of the things I specifically remember was searching for somebody who could help me body, mind, spirit, soul. All of the things combined needed to be addressed. And so I would say that's an important factor, is taking that holistic approach. And so having her help me reframe the way that I thought of things. And that was specifically what I remember, is she had this little, she would use her little blackboard in her office, and she drew this, you know, fork in the road. And she really encouraged me that when you have a thought, you can't help what that thought is when it comes into your mind. So that's the start of the why. But then you get to a crossroads where you can choose one way or the other. And one way of thinking is thinking all of the what ifs, the negative what ifs, like, okay, I'm going to take this thought and start really just spiraling downwards and feeling like a victim and thinking of the worst case scenario. So that's one road you can go down. But the other road is the positive road of what ifs. So if you take that same exact thought and go down the positive path, well, but what could happen? What, you know, can you help this? And if the answer is no, you can't help this. Okay, so what can you do with this? And taking that road of starting to retrain your brain to think positively. And I really appreciated that exercise she went through with me, because I was 100% a victim mentality person. I was very much a person who was thinking of all of the worst case scenarios, trying to protect myself from worst case scenarios. And again, I think a lot of this, she did also help me get to that root cause. And a lot of it was sort of wrapped up in the trauma of what I went through when I was a freshman in high school. So not really realizing that all of that spurred my thinking moving forward. So kind of helping me go back to that, those moments, and understanding that those moments that happened, they weren't my fault. And then how I responded to them was a way of me just trying to put a bubble around myself to protect myself and understanding that that bubble was not serving me at all. And that's what she helped me to do. So she literally helped me visualize a stop sign at the fork in the road. And she said, you get to that point and you have one of these thoughts that come in your head, get to that point, and I want you to consciously make a decision as to which path you're going to go down. And that was life. That was game changing for me. Absolutely game changing. And, you know, here I am all these years later, 20 years later, and I can honestly tell you, I'm 100% a person who now has a positive mindset. And the great thing about going through an exercise like that is that at first you do have to be cognizant of the choices you're making about the way that your thought patterns are going to go. But eventually you get to a point where it's no longer cognizant. It becomes second nature. And so it is. I look back and go, wow, I mean, that really changed everything for me because my life outlook is completely different. My thought patterns are 100% towards the positive, not saying you don't have bad days or negative thoughts, just now it's how I'm wired. So it's possible to change that thought pattern and behavior to get to a point where it becomes second nature.
Yeah. And that's, I'm so glad you were transparent about that because, you know, we start the show through your childhood and we go through your life and we bring it through today. And that's the whole thing. All of us have been programmed at some point, good or bad. And like you said, you had trauma your freshman year. We don't need to go into details, but that trauma carried through and contributed good or bad to your life. So now by you working with someone qualified, and I'm really glad you went to a same sex because counseling with the opposite sex is it's one of the most ridiculous things you can do in most circumstances. If you take a vulnerable person and someone's counseling them, you know, so many times that goes south. So it's really great that you had that where you could drill back to the root, temporarily medicated to help you get through the day with your, you know, your life, but then you got off it. The goal wasn't to stay on it for life. It was to get off it.
Yes.
So that's great. So now you're working with the counselor, you're seeing growth and change, you're visualizing an actual stop sign. I can be the victim or the victor. Where does your life go from there?
Well, so that's when I think, you know, everything started to shift into a whole, I mean, I can honestly say, I think my 30s were just this amazing experience because I'm finally becoming a healthy person mentally, which of course affects everything else and the way that I'm able to engage with my daughters and be fully present with them and everything like that. And so, I mean, from there, I would say I go through like what I call it, my tale of two cities, the best of times, the worst of times. So as a single mom, I was single for 8 years. And the first 4 years, I was very successful in the ways the world says you need to be successful. I was successful financially and in my career and all of those things. And then the last 4 years, I struggled financially. But again, it's again the tale of two cities. Those first 4 years, while I'm okay financially, I'm going through this journey with my counselor and, you know, fixing that mental health component. And I don't know if that's the right thing to say, fixing it, but honestly, that's how I feel. I feel like the way that I was thinking was broken. And I do feel like it's fixed and it'll never be perfect because, you know, we're human beings and we're not perfect people. We never will be, but that's okay. And so now being okay with the things that aren't okay, if that makes sense. But then after that, I mean, it was kind of funny because I had maybe about a good year where all the things were ticking. I felt good. I was making good choices. My mental health was on track. My finances were good. And then all of a sudden, the Great Recession hit and it really hit me hard being in real estate and I lost everything. And so in terms of when I say lost everything, I mean, lost all of my worldly possessions. I didn't lose my girls or myself or the love of God or any of that stuff, but I definitely ended up having to short sell my house and moving in with my parents. And you know, with my girls and my pride all packed up, I move in with my parents. And I'm thinking, oh, this is the temporary blip. This will just be for a couple of months. Let me get back up on my feet and I'll be off to the races and back to being self-sufficient. But that wasn't how it worked. It actually got worse from there. And I ended up financially worse, I should say. And for 2.5 years, I lived with my parents and really struggled. And so that brings us really to my $4 story. That brings me to that point in time when I'd already lost the house. I was already living with my parents. I'm trying to get back up on my feet. And part of that is I do have a background. I really did skip over my background in sales and marketing and advertising, which is part of what I went back into when the Great Recession hit. I kind of dusted that off and started working with small businesses again with their marketing and things like that. I went back into the advertising aspect where I was representing commercial photographers. So I'm doing all these things, trying to get back up on my feet. And I'm working with these small businesses and helping them with their marketing, but they're also struggling. Again, this wasn't a Jackie problem. This was a global issue that was going on. This Great Recession it was far reaching.
And you're referring to 2008, 2009?
2008, 2009.
Yeah. And for our listeners around the world, I just want to fill in a quick gap. What Jackie's talking about, ladies and gentlemen, is America, a lot of corruption in the government, like a lot of countries, but they're letting banks have their own way. They're letting people who had no business write loans, take loans. Prices were inflating, and we just got this giant economic bubble, specifically in the real estate market, but all sectors, but really the real estate was the biggest because of just fraud from the government down, and it popped. And this is just one of the many stories, sadly, that Jackie's saying. So I don't know if that affected your country, but when in America, it was a giant deal.
Thank you for filling that in. And you're right. That was primarily an American thing. And I do think it had some global reaching, but yeah.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, America affects the world. But right. What I'm saying is just specifically, you were in the biggest sector of fraud, the biggest sector affected. You know, houses were selling overpriced for $1 million, and then people were short selling for $200,000. It was just a nightmare. Right.
It really was. I mean, the day that, so it was June 2008, the day that the stock market crashed. And I can still remember at that time, I'm a single mom. I'm starting to feel struggle, but I've got a couple of deals in escrow with some buyers that I'm working with. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to be okay. You know, this will carry me forward. I'll be able to weather the storm, is what I thought. And then when that day happens, when the stock market crashed in June of 2008, both of my buyers pulled out of their escrows. Both of them were like, "Ooh, all right." So, I mean, because it affected greatly their financial situation as well. So I lose these two deals. And now all of a sudden I'm like, oh no. And now I'm like living on credit cards and no money in the bank kind of thing. And so anyway, that moves me forward to when I move in with my parents and all of that, thinking I'll get back up on my feet, working with different small businesses to help them with their marketing. And, you know, whether it's like little small tasks or jobs or taking on some bigger responsibilities with their marketing. But the thing that happened is they're struggling too. They're also having to make decisions. I mean, we backtracked before I had to short sell my house. I can still remember my first missed mortgage payment. I still remember having to make that difficult choice of saying, do I pay the mortgage or do I put food on the table and keep the lights on and the water running? And so, you know, in that moment, you go, okay, I'm going to let the mortgage lapse for now because it takes longer for them to come after you. I'm going to put food in my kids' stomachs and I'm going to keep the lights on and the water running for now. And that'll be enough. And I'll get through and I'll catch up. I can catch up. That was the thought and the moment. And then the next month comes around and you still can't catch up. And so now it just becomes like, okay, I have to let it go. And so anyway, so they're, you know, the companies I'm helping, they're making the same decisions. You know, do I pay payroll or do I pay the marketing girl? Well, of course they're paying payroll. Do I, you know, do I do these accounts payable before I pay the marketing girl? Well, I mean, obviously you're going to keep the lights on and the employees fed. They're making the same choices. And so that's how I got to the point where I had $4 left. So I wake up one morning, I check my bank account, which became a daily thing. Every day I'm checking my bank account to see, okay, where am I? How do I budget this? And I remember waking up that morning and seeing one of my bank accounts at a flat zero, another bank account overdrawn. And I look in my purse and I have $4 bills. And I remember looking at these four single dollar bills going, this is all you have. This is the extent of your worth. And yeah, so that to me is the low point where I'm going, I'm doing the work. I'm doing everything I think I need to do. And yet here I am, and I'm down to nothing and feeling that helplessness, but not hopelessness. So I think that's a very key factor, is maintaining a level of hope even when you are in your darkest moment. There's a very important factor to knowing that whatever you're going through in the moment, when you are down at the very bottom, knowing that you don't know how you're going to get through it, but you will get through it. You're going to come out on the other side. You're going to make your way through. There's a story, Jim Lovell, who was one of the Apollo 13 astronauts. He tells a story in his book about this moment where, and it's actually in the movie Apollo 13 too. So Tom Hanks recounts this story as well. So you may have heard it, but where he's flying his plane and all of his instruments go out, and they're in a lot of fog. There's all sorts of things going on where he's trying to land on an aircraft carrier and he can't see in front of him. So he's flying strictly by instrument. Well, everything goes out. But in the moment where everything goes out, he's thinking, oh my gosh, how am I going to land? How am I going to get out of this? All the things I know to rely on have failed. But in that moment, he looks up and he looks through the windshield and he sees the phosphorescence churning in the wake of the aircraft carrier. And so this path, it becomes a path, and he's able to land on the aircraft carrier based on following that path. And he makes the point that you have to look up. You have to look beyond what you know is, you know, what you're typically relying on. You have to look up and you have to look forward. And that really resonates with me, because I think that's the key in the moment when you're down. You have to look up. You have to look to the horizon of what's in front of you and know that whatever's going on, it's going to be used in your story in some way. This is going to strengthen you. This is going to become part of your testimony, part of your success story, or whatever you want to call it. It's moving you forward. So I think that was one of the things that I learned in that moment, is that you have to look forward and know, like, I'm going to get through this. So I did, though. I broke down in that moment and then said, okay, now what? So, and I don't know, I feel like I'm just babbling on. I feel like I should be pausing.
No, not at all. I do love what you said about how there's a massive, massive difference between helplessness and hopelessness. And for our listeners who've trusted Christ as their savior, you know, Jackie and I have a relationship with Jesus Christ where we've trusted him to save us. So whether it was physical illness, depression, circumstances, hardship, betrayal, it didn't matter. Even though we were helpless at times, and absolutely, like, how are we going to get through this? Why is this happening? We always had the hope that God was there with us. And there's the verse in Romans, just one of many, that talks about how all things work together to good, for good, to them that love God, to those that called according to his purpose. So that's the hope that Jackie's talking about. And if you don't know that, reach out to me, reach out to Jackie. We'd love to tell you more, but it comes from a relationship with Jesus. And as for people, if you haven't trusted Christ as your Savior yet, you can still think and pray about what Jackie's saying, how, yes, you are in a situation you maybe didn't cause. You have a situation where you have little to no control, but look at the hope. It will get better. There is, God's a loving God. He doesn't cause anything sinful or harmful. He only allows things to happen to us if it's going to better us in the future for this life and eternity. So if something's happening, Satan's the scumbag. He's the one to blame, but God's there for you. Just hang on and listen to what Jackie's saying. Keep moving forward. Look for that phosphorescence in the water and just keep moving forward, because that hope in Christ is what will anchor you and keep you in peace and joy and love, even in the darkest valley. So Jackie, I don't want to cut you off, but that's something I feel like our listeners needed to hear. Do you agree or disagree with that?
I agree so wholeheartedly. In fact, it excites me that you brought that up, because if I can just for a minute, I want to specifically talk about how God used that in my relationship with him.
Number one, it's the most important thing in the world. Number two, this is your episode. Do what God leads.
Well, it really did. So, I mean, when I talk about this, I can
and pause for 1 second. Jackie's about to tell you how losing everything and living with her parents turned out to be the best thing in her life for her relationship with God and her relationship in life. So let's just make sure we put that as an anchor premise, right?
Yes. Yes. Because let me tell you something. I mean, I told you I was born into a very faith-based family, and I feel so blessed that my parents were raising me with a strong spiritual foundation, but I rejected that wholeheartedly when I was 15. I remember sitting on my knees in my bedroom and saying, "No more, God. I don't trust you, because I feel like you let me down. If you were real, you would have protected me from all these bad things that happened to me. And so I'm going my own way." And I did. And I started to look at different faiths. Okay. I came back around. God started to call me back when I was 17 years old, but I'm stubborn and I'm a slow learner. So it took a while before I actually gave my life back to him. And this was a big part of it, because in this period of time, I mentioned I was being very financially successful for those first 4 years as a single mom. And I'm working on getting my thinking right. And I said for about a year, I was living the life, right? Well, let me tell you what I was doing wrong. I thought it was all about me. I thought I was amazing. I was awesome. I'm successful. Me, 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 me. And you know what? It's not the truth. So as I'm walking in this path, I'm walking with one foot like, yeah, I believe in God now. I believe in Jesus, but I'm not serving Jesus. I'm not letting him in a real and personal way. And so going through what I go through next and being down to the bottom and my last $4, this is when I was like, man, I'm doing everything I know to do and it's not working. And this was when I surrendered my life completely to Christ, because I laid in that bed and I said, God, you are bigger than money. Why are you letting this happen? And I felt it wash over me that he was trying to get my attention. Sorry, this gets me. It gets me really emotional, because you have to understand, when you're down to the bottom of you, sometimes that's why God wants you to reach out to him, to know that he created you. He made you on purpose for a purpose. And you can't do it all by yourself. It's not like God says, okay, I created you on purpose for a purpose. Now go live your life. And you're like, hey, thanks, God, I got this, which is how I was living. God was like, no, 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 no. I don't want you to walk on your own. I want you to walk with me. I want you to have a personal relationship with me. And I look back on it now and I can say, you know what? Jesus loved me so much that he let me lose everything so that I would look up and look to him and walk into a relationship with him. And to me, what greater love is there? And so, yeah, it was the best thing that happened to me being down to nothing. And what I can tell you is that in that moment when I said, God, you're bigger than all of this. And then I had this realization that, you know what, I'm trying to do this on my own. How about I trust God instead? Like, keep doing what you know to do, but don't trust yourself and your efforts. Trust in God. He's going to lead you forward. The joy, you know, the Bible talks about the peace that passes all understanding. And that is what filled me in that moment. I felt peace because I had no reason to feel peace, but I felt it. I felt joy. I had no reason to feel joy. I was down to nothing. I was scared. I didn't know what to do next. But the joy of the Lord that filled me up and said, oh, this is actually exciting. Let's see what you've got planned now. Okay, God, let's see how you get me out of this because I can't get me out of this. Let's see how you do it. And it became this amazing walk with God. And I want to say this too. In this moment, God put some things in place that helped me through it. And we can talk about that in a minute. But I got through this moment and I started to get back up on my feet. And I thought I was on that upward trajectory. Whoop, hit the worst. I'm done with it. We're going back into the upward trajectory. But I still had more to learn. And so I just want to encourage you that when you start to walk with God, it's a really powerful place to be, but it doesn't mean everything's going to get perfect. It doesn't mean all the fixes happen and now life is good and everything that happens next is just, you know, puppy dogs and rainbows. It's not like that. And I still had to get down to another bottom. You know, sometimes it is what it is, but when you're trusting God, it's such a different experience. So I just wanted to say that.
No, I thank you for saying it 100%. And then as humans in sinful nature, we can have these beautiful moments with God. Ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't encountered him yet, I hope you do soon again. We're not God, but talk to Jackie and I. We'll do our best to help you. But we can have these great moments and then go right back to our foolishness and all that joy stolen back again, right? But God That's wants true. Us to have it every day. So yeah. Jackie, now you're at home. You're at your parents' home, not even your own home. You got two little girls looking up to you. Your parents are looking at you. You're looking at yourself in the mirror. You got $4, which can't even buy dinner for you and your kids. Where does your life go from there?
Well, so that day I had a meeting. I was in a networking group and I had a meeting with someone in that networking group. And we were meeting at Starbucks. And I still remember I walk into Starbucks later that same day and I order a water because there's no way I'm spending my last $4 on coffee, even though I do love coffee, but it's not worth your last $4. And I sit down and we have this meeting. Now, this is a person who I'm in this networking group with, and but this is a person who's also become a good friend of mine. And so as we're sitting there talking business, he goes, okay, what gives? And I, what are you talking about? And he goes, well, you're not yourself. And I can tell something's bothering you. What's going on? So I don't share everything, but in this moment, as I mentioned, I had been doing well. My kids were both going to private school. We move in with my parents and no more private school. Now they're going to go to public school. And when this story specifically happened, it was less than a week before school was supposed to start. And so my kids who had worn uniforms to school their whole school existence, now I had to buy them school clothes. And I didn't have money to get them school clothes. And my parents had already, I mean, my parents, my gosh, they're so amazing. But again, we're not wealthy. We're just, you know, middle-class people doing the best we can. And so my parents had helped out already by buying the girls their school supplies, which was phenomenal. But I didn't have money to buy the kids' school clothes. And so I open up and I share this aspect. I say, you know, I've got these invoices out, but they're not paid yet. And I don't know when they're coming through. And I woke up this morning and I've got no money in my bank accounts. I'm overdrawn. I've got $4 left to my name. So at this moment, he says, you know what? I want to help you out. And he gives me some money to go buy the girls' school clothes. And I'm, oh, thank you so much. I'm going to pay you back as soon as these, you know, bills get, or as soon as these invoices get paid, I'm going to pay you back. And he said, I don't want you to pay me back. I want you to pay it forward. You're going to come to a place in the future where you're going to be able to help somebody, and I want you to do it. And I mean, to me, that's one of the most awesome things that somebody could have blessed me with in that time, is to say, I'm going to help you with your physical need right now. And I don't need you to give it back to me. I need you to help someone in the future. Cause that also has become something that I'm very dedicated to, and helping other people out. And that's one of the lessons, is that you have to learn to look for the helpers. You know, Mr. Rogers is famous for saying, look for the helpers. There are always helpers. And I think as human beings, we tend to want to be very self-sufficient. And I think this is especially true in the United States. I think we tend to think, you know, we can do it all, be it all, have it all, and we can do it all by ourselves. We don't need anybody. So not true. So not true. We do need others. And it's okay sometimes to reach out to somebody else and accept their help. It's hard to accept help. We have to swallow our pride in order to do it. But I did accept his help. Took the girls shopping for school clothes, and even had enough left over to take them for ice cream cones at Baskin Robbins at the end of the day. And I just remember it being so neat, because we weren't able to do stuff like that. So taking the girls for ice cream, they were so excited. And so, yeah, it was great. And then, you know what? It got me through that period of time. Those invoices got paid not that far into the future. I think it was maybe a day or two after that the first invoice came in, and I was able to move forward in that situation. But yeah, it was a terrifying moment, but packed with so much that I needed, you know, to get me to the end of me, a lot of lessons that I needed in order to move forward.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. And I always found it interesting. I feel like, and again, I'm coming from an American mindset, it seems like people that I've known through my life are polarized in asking for help. They don't want to do it, and it's like, no, 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 no. Or they have this entitled mentality where it's take, 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 take. There's not many people who have a real balance on it. So it's cool that God was showing you that, you know, you can take and you can give, and it's okay. We're here for each other. You know, it's part of the process of humanity and how God made us. So that's really interesting. So from there now, where does your life go, Jackie?
Well, so from there, I'm able to get back up on my feet. I actually connect with a really great opportunity. I worked with a couple of tech startups as their community manager, which was awesome. And also still trying to think like, okay, do I want to get my feet back underneath me in real estate? And so I'm kind of doing the stuff behind the scenes to get my feet back underneath me in that direction. And at the same time, start working with these tech startups. And it's enough that I'm able to get back up on my feet, and I get my girls and I move into a 3-bedroom apartment. And I still remember how this 3-bedroom apartment felt like a palace after, you know, I mean, and I remember we took the very first night we went over there, and, you know, I had put all my stuff in storage when I moved out of the house, I put all my stuff in storage. And so we, you know, go over there the first night, and we had the girls' mattresses on the floor and we put the two mattresses together and the three of us sleep on these mattresses on the floor. And then the next day everything gets delivered. And it was just like the coolest thing because we're like, this is ours. We're in our own place. And so that was a really amazing experience. And then getting everything set back up. But in that period of time, I did take my eye off the ball in real estate a little bit, thinking like, okay, I really want to focus in on doing this stuff for these tech companies and moving that forward. And then we lost our funding. And then that was it. And I was doing still some side projects. And honestly, like everything just within a 2-week period of time, everything was gone in terms of sources of income that I had been counting on. And so now it's like, okay, here we go again. We got to reinvent. And so this is when I go through it again. You know, like I said, it wasn't like it was all uphill. I go through it again. And this time it's different. Because when you get foreclosed on in a house, you know, you stop making your mortgage payment, it takes a few months before the bank says, we have a problem. And they start to reach out to you. And then once they go through the foreclosure, like from the minute they put you in the pre-foreclosure aspect, you know, you have 90 days at least and all these things. So you can make the thing and short sell the house and get the approvals. It's a long process. Eviction from a rental is fast and furious. And so I fall 2 weeks behind on my rent. I wake up New Year's Day with the flu. And I mean, like, and I like, and it's so funny. I tell the story and they're like, you sure you weren't hungover? No, I was home. I was with the kids. It's not like, you know, I partied too hard or anything on New Year's Eve. I wake up New Year's Day and I'm just riddled with the flu and I can't pay my rent. So I'm like, oh my gosh, here we are again. But I start going through it again. I start reaching out to, I can still remember, because I'm not afraid to cold call people. I've been in sales, you know, my whole life. It's okay. So I start hitting the phones. I'm hitting the emails. I'm hitting my network. I'm searching for any and every opportunity I can. And, you know, so here it goes. And 5 days after missing my rent payment, I get a knock on the door with the notice of eviction on my front door. And so like the clock is ticking and I'm going through it. But here's where it gets different. So now I do have this faith and this trust in Jesus, and I have a real working relationship with him. And so I am praying every day. I'm doing the work, but I'm also praying every day. God, fix this. God, help me get a job. God, help me get a marketing client. God, help me get a real estate client. God, help me get an opportunity. I'm praying for all the things. And it's just not happening. And I remember being to the point where I'm like, okay, once again, I'm doing all the things that I know to work. And now this time I think I'm laying it all on God and having that faith and trust. And I remember getting down to my knees and going, oh my gosh, I'm praying the wrong prayer. And I said, God, what if I need to go through this? What if homelessness? Because, oh, backtrack for 1 second. Now my parents have sold that house and moved into a retirement community. And I no longer have the option to move in with mom and dad again.
No safety net, no plan B, no back door.
Done, gone. And I'm literally like, wow, I'm facing real homelessness. And I go, okay, you know what? I'm on my knees in my living room floor praying, crying, and realizing, I said, you know what, God, what if homelessness is what you need me to walk through in this period of my life in order to bring you glory? What if that's what needs to happen? And I got up again, filled with so much joy because I surrendered it. I said, okay, God, where do you got to take me? I'm here for it. Is homelessness what we need to walk? I'm here for it. What do I need to lose the apartment? Do I need to lose everything yet again? Okay, let's do this. And I get up with like excitement. I'm like, all right, here we go. Let's do this. What does this look like, God? And then it was shortly after that, like maybe a day or two again, that I ended up getting connected with a job opportunity that married both my marketing and my real estate. And I started working for one of the larger mortgage companies in town and helping a few of their loan officers with their marketing, and was able to use my coaching. So when I was with the title company, I would coach realtors in terms of how to be successful and all that good stuff. So I got to use that coaching again for, you know, working with realtors again, but on behalf of the mortgage company. And so, you know, again, it was an exciting time. And, you know, you fast forward to now when we moved to Flagstaff, and I knew nobody. And I thought, okay, this is the perfect opportunity where I get to see all these things I'm coaching other people on in terms of real estate. I'm just going to put my money where my mouth is, and I'm going to see, either I'm going to prove that everything I'm saying works and we're going to watch it happen, and I'll use myself as a case study, or we're going to see that everything I've been coaching other people on doesn't work. I'm full of garbage and I better figure something else out to do for a living. So, I mean, the good news is it did work. And here I am. And I know I just hit the fast forward button on the story, but I think it's an amazing and powerful aspect, because this was the last time I got down to, you know, literally nothing. And so I've been blessed ever since, but yeah, had to go through it again.
Beautiful. And we have to talk about one big point. You did hit fast forward, which is totally fine, but you are remarried now, correct?
I am remarried.
So yes. Where does that fall in the fast forward phase?
Okay. Good question. So honestly, he was a part of all this story. He kind of saw it happen. We started dating in 2007. And then we were very on again, off again, again. Remember, I was 1 foot in, 1 foot out. And so we had a very worldly relationship. He was not, you know, he was raised Catholic, had a faith in God. But in the period of time when I met him, he was very not engaged with God at all. And so I look at what happened during this period of time and how his life overlaid with the things that I was going through at the same time. And what we both have in common, what we talk about now, is how during this period of time, we were both living very selfishly. And then God brought us to a point where we realized it and surrendered fully to him. So we were on again, off again for a few years. And then we finally, I was like, I'm done with you. We're out. Everything. And during this period of time when we weren't having any communication is when God brought me completely to surrender. And on his side, and I won't get into his story, but it's an amazing one as well. But on his side of things, God brought him to full surrender as well. So when I go through this period of time that I just described, where I'm like, okay, God, if I got to walk homelessness, let's do this. This was January 2012. And so I get this job. I don't have to walk through homelessness. I should finish that piece of the story where I am now. I pay my rent. I catch up. I'm able to keep it, the apartment. And about a month after that, he reaches out to me. Mark reaches out to me. And he, let me say this. He'd been poking the bear a lot. He'd reach out, hey, let's get together for lunch. Hey, let's get together for dinner. Hey, can I treat you to coffee, a drink, whatever? And I was like, no, I don't want anything to do with you. You're gone. So he sends me a Facebook message of all things and says, hey, it's time. Let's get together and talk about Jesus. And now I go, well, this I got to hear. So we do, we get together for dinner and we get all caught up, and I hear about how he's completely surrendered his life to Jesus. He hears about how I've completely surrendered my life to Jesus. And the amazing thing is at this meeting, I go, wow, I think I can just be friends with this guy, because before I was so in love with him and I always thought we were going to get married and all these things. So now I'm like, I released any expectation. I went, no, I think we can just be friends. I'm healed. This is good. He, on the other hand,
Yeah, I'm laughing as a guy because guys and girls can't be friends. That's like, it's ridiculous. Everybody knows it deep in their heart, but go ahead with the woman side of this.
Well, it's the When Harry Met Sally thing, right?
Yeah. It's just guys are patient, and if they love you, they'll just continue on even if they see you making stupid decisions. But guys and girls can't be friends, you know? I joke. We can go into details, but not, you can be acquaintances, but not like, oh, this is my best friend. It's like, dude, he loves you or she loves you. Get together or get out.
I think you definitely have something to that. I'm thinking we're good. We can be friends. Yeah. And he leaves that same dinner going, I'm going to marry that girl. I'm going to marry her. To which then, of course, like we both, like he treads lightly and goes slowly because there's a lot of damage done. There's a lot of water under that bridge. And so I think we're healing and becoming friends. He thinks we're healing and he's regaining my trust, I guess. And so we do, we get to a point where, and so that was in February, in September, we have the conversation where he's like, I think we should talk about you and me. And I'm like, oh, ha ha ha. Yeah. We're good friends. Yeah. You and me. Yeah. High five, buddy. And he's like, no. I mean, like doing this for real. I was like, wait, what? And I literally, you know, that moment where you think like something that you think you want for a long time, and then all of a sudden you can get it. And you're like, I don't know that I really want this. I know, I'm not sure. And so we decide, we kind of start to talk about it seriously. We're not engaged yet. We're talking about it seriously. We're really doing it behind the scenes. We're not telling our family or friends because, again, a lot of water under that bridge. So we know the advice we're going to get is going to be very skewed on the past. But we're both moving forward knowing that we want to do this honoring Jesus, putting Jesus first, or it won't work.
Like yeah, you're both changed people.
We are both changed people. So we're really coming at it from that perspective. So we do, we end up getting engaged and then we get married. So we get engaged over Thanksgiving and we get married January 12th, the 6-week engagement. And so what we ended up doing is we thought we were going to have an engagement party at a friend's house and then we were going to get married at the church. And the whole get married at the church at the time, we went to a mega church. So it was like, oh, there's a lot of rigmarole you got to go through. And you had to wait for all these different dates and you don't even know which pastor is going to marry you and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, so, totally unpersonal. Yeah, I don't like that.
It really wasn't. It wasn't the experience we thought we wanted it to be necessarily. And so we ended up doing a surprise wedding. We reached out to the pastor from the, you know, smaller church that we had gone to while we were dating earlier, who knew us both really well. And so he agreed to marry us. And so at the engagement party, we kind of do a little thing where we're on stage and we're talking, you know, to each other on stage. I call it stage. It's a big raised patio area in the backyard. And he wrote me a song. So he sings the song. And then he says, you know, I can't wait to marry this woman. In fact, I really can't wait to marry this woman. And he's like, hey, Randy, are you here? Pastor Randy, who married us. And Randy's like, oh, I'm eating. What do you want? And he's like, hey, would you marry us? Of course, we had it planned all along. He goes, yeah, sure. I guess I can marry you guys. And so we had a friend who sang a song. And while she sang the song, I went back, put on a wedding dress. The girls walked me up the aisle and we got married.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was very cool. And we had about 100 people there and people who had known us in various ways and over the years, and they were shocked. It was so much fun. So
I've never heard of that. That's so cool.
It was neat. And it was, you know, like, because we just wanted to get married and start living our life together and honoring Jesus. And that was that was our heart. And so it was great because we were like, you know, as an engagement party, we told people not to bring presents. A few people did, but I mean, so it wasn't about presents. It wasn't about pomp and circumstance. It wasn't about any of those things. I think the only thing we spent any real money on was the catering and the food. That's it.
Nice. So good. So between that date and today, bring us up to date, Jackie, on anything else we missed. before we transition to where are you today, where are you heading next, and how can we as a remarkable community help you get there?
Awesome. Well, so we lived in Scottsdale, Arizona at the time. And so we were married for about a year and a half. Let me say this. I had shared custody with the girl's dad. So they would do a week on, a week off. So I'd have them for a week, then they'd go to their dad's for a week. And he went through some hard stuff as well. And so Mark and I are married for 3 weeks when I get the call from my ex-husband and he goes, hey, kind of had some stuff happen. I'm not gonna be able to take the girls for a while. I need to go do this stuff over here. And so we became full-time with the girls, having married 3 weeks, we've become full-time. And which honestly is like the biggest blessing because it really did bond us as a family. And it was absolutely amazing. And so we were blessed in that way. So the girls were 11 and 13 when we got married and were able to move forward as a family. Well, so then we're married for about a year and a half and Mark gets an opportunity. We're both in real estate and he knew a builder, had been talking to a builder, had built with a builder in Flagstaff a while ago. And so they kind of approached him and said, hey, why don't you come work for us? And he was bored with residential real estate, you know, doing it, what he'd been doing for, you know, so many years. And so he goes up and goes, I'm going to take the lunch. Why not? You know, it never hurts to take the lunch and see what people have in mind. So he calls me and he goes, Jackie, I think this is a great opportunity. And he tells me about it. And he goes, so I don't know, what do you think? Should we move to Flagstaff? And I go, yeah, let's do it. Nice. So we're both very adventurous, I would say. And so I think he was shocked that I said, yeah, let's do it. But we did. So we moved to Flagstaff, Arizona, which is a mountain town. It's 2 hours north of Phoenix, you know, and 5,000 feet in elevation. So we're at 7,000 feet elevation in Flagstaff, where the Scottsdale Phoenix area is around 2,000. So we're up in the mountain town of Flagstaff, Arizona, and this is when I get the chance to really reinvent myself as a, you know, as a professional. And like I said, say, all right, either what I coach and teach works or it doesn't. And so the good news is that I definitely proved that it worked. And so have had a very blessed career, have been, you know, top 1% in our brokerage nationwide for the last 5 years running. I run a team now. I have a business partner, Stacy, and Aaron Reich and I, we have a team together. And so now we're covering kind of that Northern Arizona area selling real estate. And that's been amazing. And then I also picked up my coaching again. And so I've been coaching with my brokerage, training our new agents for the last 4 years, and I love it. And so I also do a coaching program for agents nationwide. And I do group coaching pods. We do them, they're 3 months at a time. And so it's been awesome. So that's where I'm at today.
Beautiful. So if somebody wants to get in touch with you, continue the conversation, learn more, talk with you about coaching, what's the best way to reach you?
So if you're specifically interested in the real estate coaching, you can go to the website byreferral.com, and you can download I've got a 4-step guide to working with your sphere of influence. You can download that and then you'll get put in the loop for coaching and things like that. Anything else you want to know, you can go to stepstostrength.com and that'll take you anywhere. The stories I've shared with you today, I've written in a couple of different books. So you can buy the books there. You can connect with the coaching. You can connect with me as a real estate agent. And you can connect with me and my husband. We do a YouTube channel called Empty Nester Life. So you can even connect with that there. So there's lots of ways to get in touch with me. But Beautiful. Yeah, that's all at stepstostrength.com.
Awesome. And we'll have all those links in the show notes as usual, ladies and gentlemen. Well, Jackie, between your birth and today, is there anything we missed in your story or any last words you want to share with us?
You know, there's always a lot of moving pieces to the story. I will say that 100%. I think the parting word I would love to leave you with is just to know and understand that you're going to go through hardships. As a human being, it's part of the human experience. You're going to suffer. You're going to go through hardships. Know that the hardships, the suffering, all of that stuff, it's not optional, but how you get through it is. And even in the moments where you do feel helpless, you don't have to be hopeless. And I know David and I both shared our extreme faith in Jesus. And I think that is the key to the human experience, is that I think God wants a personal relationship with you. And I think that Jesus is the way to get there. And I'm happy to discuss that with you in any way, shape, or form. But even if that's not something that you personally are connecting with right now, there are still things that you can connect with to get you through those hard times and get you moving forward. You don't ever have to be helpless. You don't ever have to be so at the end of your rope that you just want to exit the human experience altogether. God's got a plan for you, and you are created on purpose for a purpose. And I just would encourage you to lean into that and find that purpose and live on purpose, not just getting through the day and going through it by accident. That's, there's anything I can leave you with, that's what it would be.
Amen. I don't think there's a better way to leave it. So thank you so much, Jackie. And ladies and gentlemen, like our slogan says, don't just listen to great information that Jackie brought you. Do it. Repeat it each day so you can have a great life in this world, but most importantly, an eternity to come. So my name's David. Reach out to me if you need help. This is our remarkable friend, Jackie. Jackie, thank you again for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, likewise. Ladies and gentlemen, share this episode with your friends and family, those who need it. Apply it in your own life. I'll apply it in my life. Jackie's going to apply it in hers. It's a constant growth, constant moving forward, keeping that balance on life. But remember, as soon as you have balance, Saints always trying to shake the cart, right? So kick him in the face and get back to enjoying the life God has for you. So Jackie, again, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll see you in the next episode. Ciao.
The Remarkable People Podcast. Check it out. Remarkable People Podcast. Listen, do, repeat for life. The Remarkable People Podcast.